And let's get it started.
Erstmal herzlich willkommen zu unserem Talk. 10.000
First of all, thank you and welcome to the talk.
10.000 Seiten später,
10.000 pages later, what kind of feelings I have after reading these reports. And I'm very privileged to be able to ask questions to you. And because many things are actually quite complex, and here we can go very deep into the topic. Hi, my name is Claudia, and during my everyday life I look into climate science, and I'm also involved in the topics of meteorology, climate science, and I'm working as a journalist as a journalist, I'm very eager to ask questions, and I'm very happy to do that. And you have read the IPCC report on a voluntary basis. So the IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Some people call it the Climate Council, the Global Climate Council. But it's actually a very big institution that has been working since the 80s. And the task of that consortium is to look at climate change closely and use the scientific evidence as a foundation for political decision making. That means that there is more than 200 governments, more than 100 organizations that are involved in the IPCC, and it's a really, really big organization. And they have released 6 reports and 10 special reports, and you have produced a podcast together with Julian Freistetter, and you have looked very closely at the contents of these reports. And first of all, why did you read all of that? Well, that's actually a good question. I have to admit that this was never my intention. And Julian was looking for someone who would read those reports and to do this together with him. And I actually didn't know that it would be 10,000 pages. I only knew it was a lot. But I also found this topic so interesting. And that's why I said, yes, I actually want to do this. So I want to read this for 1.5 years. I want to read the whole thing. Okay, and about the contents, this is something you talked a lot about in the podcast. And I just, I have also listened to that podcast because I'm also very interested in climate science. So the title of the podcast is Der Podcast zur Wissenschaft hinter der Krise. And I think it is something important to talk about, and I'm yes, I'm very excited to hear about all the things that we're going to talk about. And I still wonder, when you look at this huge topic, is there also something that makes you happy when you look at those really big things? When it comes to positive emotions, yes, there are some. When you read these reports, then there are also positive aspects or positive things. Because you have the feeling that, yes, I'm looking at this, I'm understanding it, and I'm talking about this, I'm reading about it, and I feel more safe in this topic, because there's so much information coming from all sides. And I'm also proud because I almost read all of because I almost read all of it. So you need a lot of endurance. So just a short remark. So it's actually not like a series. It's more like So you can't just jump right into the middle of something in this topic. You have to actually begin at the very start and then proceed to the end in the right order. But I'm really happy that I managed to process everything in one go. And do you have the feeling that you understand the things better now, or is it still overwhelmingly complex? You need to differentiate. So there's three parts. One part of the report is the physical foundations, which also includes the meteorology, which is my background. But there are also parts that I didn't anticipate. You look at money, capitalism, inequality in the world, and innovation process. How can we develop new technology? There is a lot of things that I didn't expect. When you look, when you think about emotions, of course, there's this feeling that accomplishment that you have managed to process everything. But the thing is that the things that you've read, these are things that are already known. These reports just combine all that existing knowledge to write this one long report. And we as humanity actually know all of these things. Now we just need to act on the knowledge. And when I think about this, so there's a lot of negative emotions when in this topic. So how are there things that make you sad when you read these reports?
Das Wissen ist da, liebe Leute.
Because the knowledge is there. Yes, some things have made me sad, and it's true. When you read these reports, then you're on an emotional roller coaster. And I was saddened by, as a society, that we are wasting a lot of time. And to read this again and again, because it's not just stated once, but many times, when you see the curves, the CO2 levels over time, there are so many missed opportunities, and it's happening again and again. Every time I'm saddened by this, and you feel this vulnerability, we humans are vulnerable because we are dependent on this planet, and I feel guilt because I am part of society, and this is a difficult emotional state, and it's hard to bear sometimes. Because for some people, yes, for those who are affected by it, who are the cause for this development, we still feel powerless. So sometimes I think talking about this
in general, like with the people around you, and on social media, it just helps me. And I also paint a lot, and every episode we were doing and we talked about, I painted or I drew comics. I'm not too good at it, but it doesn't matter. I tried to process the things I heard my painting or drawing. And drawing these comics really helped me a lot. Did you sometimes have to put the report away because it just got too much? I can imagine that in everyday life you see certain things that kind of relate to the report but are carried out differently in everyday life. Sometimes I really had to put it away, and sometimes I even threw it away. Well, I didn't throw my computer away, but I wish I could have, because I couldn't have a look at this report for 1 or 2 days. And then I took it up again after a few days because I wanted to read it, and it gave me a goal to work towards. But from time to time, I just needed that break because it's unbearable. But we have to talk about it, we have to read it.
And what was the most rejecting for you?
I think the excuse was really the most appalling thing. I mean, that the report itself doesn't give an excuse, but I try to apply it to what's going on in the world. And there are several decisions that just weren't made and processes that aren't carried out fast enough and other things to consider. And I see this, but I can't accept those apologies, those lame excuses for not doing it anymore. I'm disappointed and really appalled by the status quo, because it's still not clear that we want to protect nature and environment, but we still don't want to build windmills and use wind energy, because if we don't do it now, there won't be anything left to protect. And I was really shocked by myself sometimes, because my reaction was really, really heavy. And I want to add something. Another thing that I was really appalled by was, or made me question, what are we doing here? Are the many bits and pieces of information about human beings, about people who are especially affected by climate change, but we won't hear their voices. Let's start with disabled people, up to LGBTQ communities, to people of color. You know, there are so many different groups of women, of children, of certain people whose voices are just not being heard. But they are the ones who suffer the most. And this really gave me a hard time.
And you have also talked about this in the podcast, or talked about it in different contexts. And you talked about this for over 1 year, and there was a new episode a few days ago about climate finances, where's the money, and you looked more closely at the dynamics of the finance. Does it help you to look at these things more closely? Because I think it's really impressive how detailed you looked into these things. There are, I know, some podcasts where there are only some show notes, but you really included a lot of information from pictures, additional explanations with links in your podcast. Is it also your way of dealing with this, to process this topic? I would I think that. Do you want to do this to make it easier for other people to engage with the topic?
Both, of course. At this point, a very big shout out to Florian. In the beginning, I participated in doing the descriptions, but for now, I'm just not able to because of time issues. And what he does, he is listening to the entire podcast again and again, and then he cuts all the ums and ers out, and he makes notes. I've never asked him actually how he feels about it, but we will have to talk about it, because to me, it's really helpful to extract the real information of it and put it together. And this ensures that the people who listen to us don't have to open the report for themselves and read through it and read all the pages and look at all the images. But also we for ourselves, it helps us to get to the core of the issue. Because the information is always with us. We are surrounded by it. But in our format, we get back to the facts. What's the gist? What are the 3 to 5 core topics that seem the most important to us?
How long do you need to read one chapter?
About 2 weeks. I think it's about 2 weeks on average. So we change reading it. So theoretically, I'd only have to read half of it, but I always read both parts. But I don't prepare both parts, obviously. And it takes me a really intense time to read through those with my drawings, with the comments I add. And for the other part, I just flick through it. So in total, it's 2 weeks. It's about 300 pages. To be fair, those pages contain a lot of references and a long list of authors, and also the images that can be quite big in size, so it's not only text. And if you see those images, you think, well, I don't have to read this page, but I mean, try to interpret those images you have there, those graphics, and sometimes you don't even understand them. And it's really hard to say, I don't understand that graphic or the whole paragraph, but I mean, you have to continue reading because maybe the next part, the context helps you to understand it, or maybe having a discussion about it. And really, you have to deal with it that in between, you just don't have a clue what it's about. And sometimes I didn't find out my way out of the jungle.
How can I imagine a diagram?
So could we show some slides, please? I can also share my slides later, but just to have a short glance to give you an idea. So this is like the graphs I draw, the diagrams I do. And this is one example for a graph. It's about glowing coals, a burning ember diagram. And there's so many information in it. It's only half a page, but I could talk about it for half an hour. That's that much information is in there.
Okay, so this was half an hour.
Listen to the podcast to know more.
But in any case, this is really impressive. How long do you need to understand such a graphic? And we also need to say that you studied this. And I haven't, yeah, so I don't have the background for this, to understand this.
Also ganz hart gesprochen, ich habe das erste Drittel studiert.
Well, I studied the first third, like the physical basics, and it's been a while. And the second third, which is about adaptation to climate change, I didn't study that one. So it's about building, about city planning, urban planning, coast management. Completely different topics I didn't have to deal with before. It's about renewable energies, electromobility, also urban planning again. And I also didn't study this. And I noticed that these parts were more hard for me to understand them correctly. And they certainly take more time.
Okay. I think it's still impressive that when you have, you know, when you have a basic education in those scientific area, then it's still difficult, and it's I'm really impressed that you fought through all of those things. And maybe you were actually angry at other people because it was hard to read.
So I got angry a lot.
Bitter
and frustrated. But I mean, I was angry before. It's not really brand new news. But I was able to direct my anger into another direction. And sometimes you decide to eat meat, to drive your car. We are aware it's bad for the climate, but we are pointing fingers on other people who do it. And the report showed me that we can't progress with this behavior. It doesn't take us where we should be, because we still live within a system. We are all part of this system, of this society, and we should fight those obligations. But the decision to buy a bamboo toothbrush instead of a plastic one might be hard for some people. We don't know their individual situation, what they would be able to afford. So we shouldn't say, why doesn't that person do it? Some people just don't worry about reusable plastic toothbrushes if they are not well. What we should question is the system, and why are bamboo toothbrushes more expensive than plastic ones? Why do SUVs even exist? Why are they allowed to drive within the city center? Why do we have that much individual road traffic? So I direct my rage away from the people, from the individuals, who can contribute to the greater good, but I direct it at the system, about the political actions and the big players that are involved. So it shifted in a different direction, and also towards myself, because sometimes I catch myself pointing fingers on individuals again. Of course, there are some decisions you can absolutely question, but at the moment I prefer directing my anger at the big players, so at the SUVs. But are you asking those questions to anyone, or are you drawing a comic? What is happening? I think it would be difficult to address individual persons or just make the decision to yell at one single person, because that person does something I just don't find okay. If the rage goes towards the system, I imagine it must be more difficult. Did you find a manner to cope or to pose the questions?
I'm still searching. Apart from my political changes that I have implemented and my changes in my views, so I actually changed quite a bit by reading these reports, also in context of activism, but I'm still searching for answers on how I want to act on these things, and I need time for this. And I'm reading the last summary at the moment. When I've done that and when I can close the report, then I hope that I will be able to find a way to act. So I haven't found a solution yet.
You just mentioned there's the core report, several summaries for decision makers and who don't have the time or don't want to take the time to read the entire report. But you really took a deep dive. You read both the summaries and the core report. What surprised you while reading it?
Oh, surprised. There were many surprises. Sometimes new points of view or perspectives. There are stories, and so I say stories because there are individual activities that happened or where communities acted and experienced climate change, and these points of view, and which typically were in small info boxes, so small tidbits of additional information, they really surprised me. And also that those climate reports are progressing, developing themselves over time. Not so much the climate science, but the way the report is written. New topics are added, new humans, new perspectives are added to these reports. And when you look at the chapters and the list of authors, then you see that, for example, there's a chapter Asia, and then you will, let me quickly scroll over to that part to show you this. Then you will mostly see Asian authors, and there's a much higher focus or greater focus on including and representing humans who are affected in addition to the experts in the scientific areas. And there is a commitment that more people are represented And there is an increasing diversity in the contributors who produce these climate reports. And of course, it's very difficult to offer and orchestrate the offering process of these reports. And it's not perfect, but you can definitely see that something is changing and something is happening when it comes to collaboration and co-offering with different different people across the world. And I was also surprised by belief. There was a chapter about belief and religion and how belief and religion affects how we interact with nature. And that was surprising to me, seeing this chapter. And I read the word belief, and if people believe in climate change, so how many, so do people not believe in climate change? This was an interesting way to express this, and how they use this wording in everyday life, that people might say, I do not believe, or I do believe in climate change.
And I also did I understand correctly? There was a whole chapter about Pope.
So he looked into this topic and also religious people also were looked at, and it was described how they interact with how they act in the face of climate change, because Earth is our home, and it's important to look at people with religious backgrounds, how they look at the topic of climate change. And I didn't expect this. I didn't expect the Pope to being cited in these reports. And then I dived into the text that was quoted.
Okay, so it's not only this one big complex physical science topic, but it's combined knowledge from all possible areas that affect real people. At what point did you have to especially struggle while reading it? Because I notice, you know, you go through a roller coaster of emotions when reading it, and really decide to continue reading it because of that. What was especially hard?
So I'm a bit sorry to say this, but sometimes this was actually boring to read. The report is designed to say, I am coming from a specific sector, for example, construction or energy economy or industry, and I just want to know what kind of adaptations I have to implement to be prepared for the climate crisis, to reduce the harm. And then I can just look at that part of the report and learn about those things that I only care. But if you read the whole report, then you also read something about Europe, which is a region, and we have to ask, and then you can read about what Europe needs to do to mitigate climate, the effects of climate change. And I'm reading how the energy sector in Europe is adapting, And then there's different subsections in the report. And then it really felt like I'm reading things again and again, but sometimes I was still surprised, even though I read this and then I said, okay, yes, I read this somewhere else already. But sometimes you still see new tidbits that surprise you, even if a lot of things are repeated.
You also talk about it in podcast.
Yes, but not only in the podcast, but I also talked to a lot of people around me with information about climate. And I have accumulated a lot of information about where things are in the report and what kind of information is actually in the report and what is not in the report. A lot of people, so I can help people find information in the report or how not to find.
So you're not an impersonated encyclopedia, but you kind of can point out where in encyclopedia people may find the information.
Yes, so this is, I'm like a librarian. I tell people where to find things.
It seems that you're content to be this indicator of directions and to be able to say, I listen to someone, I hear about a problem, and I have an idea of how to approach it.
Yes. So I see this as a positive thing, and I always try to see things positively, even though it can be stressful and tiring, because I have all of this information in my head. And then I meet people who say it's all too late, and then I feel like, no, it's wrong. The report says it's not too late. And people look at me with big eyes, and then I can't stay calm. And then people say, I know that, or I heard this, and that this technology would solve it. And then I say, no, in the report, there's actually something else. And there's a lot of people who just are wrong, do not have the right information. And people don't listen to me. And some people just say, it's just the IPCC. And some people just don't believe me and ask me, why should you actually know this? And then I say,
So what would be a situation where you would get confused or fall into the trap?
Yes, I still think it's good that people actually question those things. And I think it's okay to question things. And of course, the report is already 1 year old and there's new research coming out. But a foundation that we can agree on, when people argue against this, or when people don't understand this and say things that are fundamentally wrong, then it's really difficult for me to stay calm. And then sometimes I'm just 2 hours in a discussion when there's a big disagreement. And then I also really need to tell people, hey, you are wrong, and I can't just accept them spreading falsehoods. And sometimes I really have to tell myself, okay, this is not worth it, I need to stop.
Well, this is something I find really sad, because knowledge is not only opportunity and creates more space, but it can also be a burden. A burden you have to carry around with you. Whom are you talking about this? Do you have scientific friends, or is it just anyone who crosses your path in that moment? Or who are the people you prefer to talk about this burden?
I talk to friends and people I know, to some degree, people I am very close to some degree, other people. And sometimes it's even close people who say wrong things, which makes it extra hard to have these discussions. And I talk to people who I trust. That's typically acquaintances, even spontaneous acquaintances, including my coach, and who calls me back and tells me about how to interact with people and how to how to use my emotions adequately, and there are people who do research in the topic of science communication, and yes, it can be frustrating, and I understand this. And then you can have an exchange on a very colloquial level. And there's a lot of things you can do. And I want to talk about what activists do and how it feels for these activists to communicate with others and to have this discussion on the meta level.
But this also means that the report should be published with a big warning: pay attention to what you're getting yourself into and make sure to be surrounded by the right people and support, and don't just jump into it. I mean, looks like this to me, because you can't just go like, ah, yeah, tomorrow I'll read into it, but you really have to think about it beforehand and prepare. Did you do this, or did it even occur to you that you need to prepare? Or maybe I take it to the top?
A bit exaggerated, but there's still a kernel of truth. And I've read a lot of scientific articles in my life, including climate science articles, and I thought, yeah, that's 10 pages science. That's what I do on a daily basis. I'm a scientist. I read things and I talk about it. And I didn't expect that it would affect me on a personal level so much. I'm not sure if you need a warning, but there is a potential, because, yeah, those 10,000 pages can actually affect your personality. Yeah, but I didn't really think about psychological consequences in advance.
And what were the parts where you really got scared, where it frightened you, or where you felt lonely while reading the report?
There's a lot of, I felt a lot of uncertainty, because those things can't be addressed by a single person. So it's, I can't solve this on my own. We all have to work together. And then you look left and right and you see a lot of people not going in the same direction as you, and you feel weak because you're not able to do much on your own or alone, and you feel helpless. But then it makes sense to look at the report and see what kind of things you can actually do and how communities across the world address climate change. And you can expand your horizon and interact and talk to people who are also working against climate change to help with your own scaredness.
Did it increase over time, or does it has it highs and lows? How would you describe it?
So it was a continuous roller coaster. There, so short trigger warning on war for 2 minutes. So better disable sound or stop listening if you don't want to hear about war. There is a section about the potential for war and conflicts. What can happen? War on resources, war on space when the sea levels rise. Those things really scared me. That was a really deep chapter. And I couldn't handle this. And I started reading this, and I was really surprised how much it affected me. But there's also an entire section how this can actually be a chance or an opportunity. And for example, rivers don't end at borders in all cases. So this is an opportunity for international cooperation when several countries are affected and people interact and collaborate across borders with measurement devices. And people just get started and ignore that there are borders between countries. And cooperation is being created because of climate change that wasn't there before. And therefore, people lose fear and gain hope, because there can be positive consequences when you approach things in the right way. And there can be new treaties and cooperation.
It's good to see the light at the end of the chapter, at least. So, what are appropriate times of the day to read it? I like to read in the morning or before I go to bed. Both doesn't seem like the ideal option to read a report like this, because maybe you need an hour to calm down. And I just get on about something different to get it out of your mind, because it wouldn't let you sleep. Did you try to set time limits for your reads?
Wow, what a question. That's actually a good one. No, I didn't have any time limits. But I know where I read the most things, and that's mostly in trains. And when I'm among people, for example, in a train or in a cafe, then it was nicer to read. It felt just better when I read among people. But otherwise, very late at night. I'm a night owl. I am awake at 2 a.m. and sit at my desk. But often I'm online on Discord, and people were playing and talking, and I had the report in front of me, and I was reading it. And yeah, basically people were around me. And now I just actually see it, the green thread, that there were always people around me. So I could actually raise my head while I was reading, and then I could express myself, say, I don't understand this part, and have people actually still realize I'm here.
So it's not like literature, novels, criminal romance, but sometimes it might be good to be in contact with the outside world. And it might just be reading one of the most detailed descriptions of reality, and it sounds at parts it sounds super horrible. But I keep reading it, but I'm surrounded by beautiful things. You know, the sun is shining. I still know I'm alive. Maybe subconsciously, this lifts you up.
Yeah, actually, I didn't really think about it, and yeah, I think you have a point.
Okay, also.
Okay, so what I take away for myself is that it changes people, not only when you read 10,000 pages of anything, but especially of this material. I found it interesting that you mentioned those little spots of light you see while reading it. How many were there? Or how regularly did those occur? Because you might remember them more easily. That's why you mentioned them, but there also might be long, dark tracks while reading it. So, are they even countable?
No, there's no general way to say this, because it's just a listing of facts, of scientific facts, and the good news or the good facts. Those are the things that you create yourself when you read the reports. For example, when you read about cooperation and positive effects, and there are different things that trigger a positive feeling in me when I read about initiatives that where nests for penguins are built, and where you read about those initiatives and focus less on the big negative picture, and then you read about those things that I've described in a very pragmatic way about the penguins and their nests. But and I think everyone reading those reports will get something else out of them. But for me, initiatives, communities, people, when you read about them, there's a lot of things you can read from those sections, and you see that people actually want to contribute positive things. And I don't want to give any numbers how much there is, how many times I had a smile on my face when reading those things. But there are positive parts in these reports.
I think, yeah, it also might be difficult to ask for a conclusion. But I would ask you, would you read it again?
That's the big question. There will probably be a seventh report. If I would read that, I can't tell. It was a lot of stress and work to read this, and I'm still working full time, and this is things I do in addition to my full time job. It takes a lot of time, very pragmatic. I have to consider if I would like to do this emotional roller coaster. I would actually rather have a couple of months time to just process all the things I've read. And if I could travel back in time and I would see Florian's requests with the knowledge that I have now, then I would say yes, count me in, because despite all the bad experiences, it was still a good thing to know all of those things. And I'm glad that I did this. But doing it again, it's hard to make a prognosis. I would need to run a model to give an answer on that.
Okay, then if we need new research, let's stay with what we have for now. So if you look further beyond, you say you do it again because it shows you what you already got, what's in progress, what's growing. But in general, would you recommend everyone to read it or parts of it? And what would you expect to be their reaction? I think because it's very polarizing. On the one hand, it's incredible that this knowledge has been accumulated, that we humans can write this knowledge down, all the scientific processes behind it. But on the other hand, I ask myself, does really everyone have to know it? Because it also doesn't really work. And I don't think that everyone is in a situation, be it time-wise, already existing knowledge, in a position to really read it and absorb it. So what would be your expectation for other people? Would you want them to read it, or would you rather have not everyone read it, but rather listen to your podcast?
And I don't think everyone has to read this. Not everyone has to read this. There are humans where I definitely think you should do it, because I notice that there's a lot of misunderstanding and ignorance. But those people who know that we need to do something, and if they ask me, what should I read, what should I look at, then I would tell them, then look at the things where you can do something. For example, where you can do something locally, for example, with brown coal and excavations, the whole topic around Hambach, if this is your local area. So I would recommend to read those parts where you locally can affect things. And this is something I think is meaningful. Yes, of course, you can get a big or general overview with big reports, but for the things that you personally care about, where your heart is burning, there I would recommend that you look at local things you can do. There is an IPCC chapter about local action, and I think people should find their own things that they can do. And some people also say that the IPCC is a rather moderate description, and there are also other publications and research where you can look at things that are even more cutting edge and relevant. But If you want to read the whole thing, if you want to have the complete overview, then you can, of course, do that.
But you have provided us with a lot of insights of this whole roller coaster. And I noted that it does something to you. But also, if you work in science like you do, I think you might have some professional approach towards it. I mean, I also find it really fascinating to get those information. But for you personally, did something change? Whom do you trust? What information do you trust? What are your sources? Did something change in that area over time? Because some information provided was not complex enough and others did a better job at delivering it. Because with the knowledge you built over this 1.5 years, you might be able to rate this information in a different way.
Actually, I enjoy, or I developed a joy for seeing that people learn and understand the climate topic. I'm also happy about people who explain things in a very simplistic way. But yeah, so I also am happy about people who do a 25 minutes YouTube video about the topic. And I'm encouraged, or I'm happy that there's so much diversity when in terms of communication, because people are different and sometimes different forms of climate communication are differently effective for different people. And I don't judge people in terms of how they talk about the climate crisis, but it's more about that they, so that I'm celebrating the diversity, how people communicate in many different ways. And if someone explains something incorrectly, then I also say that I also explained some things incorrectly in the past, and then I would still say, then I would still try to correct people, and I also corrected myself in the past. And sometimes you have to explain things more deeply.
Thinking about it, I personally feel really angry because it's political decision makers who talk such nonsense. Where it's clear as glass that it's not true. And sometimes it's even evil-willed, you know, it's done on purpose. Or they oversimplify things, put a slightly weird perspective on it. So how do you cope with this? Let's call them fake facts presented on the big stage by people who have a big reach. Because I think there are people who are in charge of that report to gather this information, but they can't even manage to prepare really useful and factual-based information. Doesn't make it angry.
I think automatically that anyone who talks about the climate, that they try to
Aber ja. Es gibt ja eben auch noch andere Akteure in unserer Welt, die, wie gesagt, große Bühnen haben.
But there are also actors on, as I said, huge stages in this world.
Yes. I'm sometimes negatively surprised how hard to bear it is, how much misinformation is being produced. Some people could easily check that people are spreading lies, and I'm really, I'm not giving, it's very hard to give people the benefit of doubt when they spread so much misinformation. And but for me, because it's so frequently that people are very persistent and systematic with their misinformation, and I'm out of patience, and I'm getting very quickly, angry very quickly.
So it's quite a significant change if you realize that your knowledge is higher than other people's. As you just said, it differs from person to person. If you read the report or not, most people won't have the resources for it. But nonetheless, if you wanted to convince me to read this report, what would be your strongest points in favor of it? Why would you say reading this report is the right decision, although it might go quite heavy on you and affect your everyday life? What are the reasons to read it?
Oh God, this is hard. But for that, you actually would need to know the person very well. And I'm not sure if I would give that advice. I think I would recommend this to people who are very rational, where people say, yes, so these are facts and you have to work with them. And when you read those reports, then you realize that there's a lot of emotions, and you feel that, so when you read this, then it's a lot of facts, and you will, so there is a lot of emotion involved when you read this, but it's still facts. And you have to, and then there's the question, of course, how to react when politics, so in general, just look at those things as facts. But I wouldn't recommend to those people to read it.
I mean, with the different stakeholders in there, it's also why I hold back a little bit, because it's a highly intriguing topic, but at the same time, I ask myself, well, it's nothing new, right? And even I say this, and I'm not too much of an expert in this matter. But I've read and heard so much about it for years. You know, remember back the Agenda 2020 when we grew up. I don't understand how this topic could be ignored for that long. And that's why I think I just have a native anger within me when it comes to it. And I'm happy that there are people like you or Florian Freistetter who read the report and then summarize the facts in their podcast. You said we don't necessarily have to mention it, but I'm a huge fan of binge listening to podcasts, but I mean, there's 73 episodes now, but it's certainly worth listening to all of them. I think it's a great opportunity to learn about the topic and not having to go through all the information in the original report. I think others agree. We have received a lot of comments thanking you for your work there. And thank you for taking us on this journey and also including all the warnings, but also the rays of light, the short rays of hope in there. Thank you very much for the insights, for the over an hour of talk. And a huge thank you to all the organizers, to everyone who participated, who made this possible here. We have arrived at the end of this Q&A regarding 10,000 pages later, what impact the climate report had on me, or and Claudia, in this case.
And maybe next time we choose a different title. If there's a next time.
Yeah.